Hi there. My name is Chris Kartnitsky. I've been a librarian in the public library system for 18 years, and I've been a labor activist for more or less the same amount of time. And that gets to be a hard, sad job. And and then Seattle happened, and it got a little easier. And a new window into activism opened up, and for me, a whole revitalized world of politics. And I discovered anarchism. And about a year ago, I joined an organization called NEFAC, which is the Northeastern Federation of Anarcho-Communists. And this is a platformist group, and we can talk a little bit about that later. But this is a program that we are sponsoring with our friend Chuck Offini, who's from Dublin, with the Workers' Solidarity Movement, another platformist organization. And he is going to talk about his work in Ireland, and we're going to sort of spread the word about organized anarchism and what that means and what we can learn and what we can accomplish with that. Before we start, I just want to thank Steve Rabinowitz for setting up the room for us, and the WSA, who are co-sponsoring this event for us, and they are our comrades, and we thank them. So let's turn it over to Chekhov, okay? Go ahead.
Hi, everybody. It's a great pleasure to be here, and I'd like to start by thanking NEFAC and the WSA for having me here. Okay, before I go on to talk about Irish anarchism, I'm going to just fill you in a little bit on the background context, the political landscape in Ireland. And there's a couple of factors in Ireland that make it quite different from most Western countries. The first one is the fact that over the last few centuries, most of the social struggle on the island has been concentrated on the national question. Basically, in 1921, the southern part of the country gained its independence, but the British presence remains in the north until this day, and this is still the focus for much of the social activism on the island. Over the years, the obvious immediacy of this battle and the mass nature of the conflict has meant that it's been very tempting for activists to abandon sort of low-level and ongoing social work, or not social work, but activist work within trade unions and mass campaigns, and go to where the real action is, which has been in the north. When whole neighbourhoods were getting burnt out, and when the British Army was shooting peaceful protesters, It was a very strong urge to get yourself there. However, the logic of the nationalist position and the logic of the nationalist movement in Ireland was always that any discussion of social questions, how the society was going to be organised, was always put off until the national question was resolved, until we could have independence from Britain. And so this had the effect of sort of sapping the strength of the left, as all the left activists were supposed to join the national struggle, and later on we'd talk about like socialism. That was always put off. Unfortunately, it was put off a very long time. The other major factor which has caused the left in Ireland to be quite weak in comparison to most Western countries is the fact that until very, very recently, Ireland has been, in comparison to almost every other Western country, has been very impoverished, it has been backward, socially conservative, and dominated by the Catholic Church. In this atmosphere, many people had no, particularly the young, the disaffected, and the people who would normally join movements of social protest, they had no option but to emigrate to the cities of England, Australia, the United States to find jobs, and also to find some type of social freedom. Okay, and because of these factors, the left in Ireland was always very, very weak. But in particular, anarchism was almost completely unknown. Because anarchism, there was a small anarchist group in the 1880s, but anarchism, whenever it popped up, by its nature, it hit straight on with the Catholic Church. The Catholic Church just did not like anything anarchists had to say. And, for example, the first meeting of the First International in Dublin, it had a branch, but it only lasted 2 months, because the bishops basically organised mobs of Catholics to run them out of town, basically on the excuse that these people were anti-Catholic. Okay, so between the 1880s, when you had this very small anarchist group, maybe five or six people, and the 1970s, there was pretty much not one single anarchist in the country. And it was only in the 1970s, in the south of the country, several ex-members of the official IRA started to become interested in anarchist ideas. And it was in London, they had emigrated to London, where they first came across these ideas. And then they came back to Ireland and started, they had established some links with British anarchists. Now, they set up several anarchist groups. One of them was called the Dublin Anarchist Group. Another was called New Earth. These anarchist groups were very, very short-lived. And they were very, very little known within Ireland. And one of the reasons why they were so short-lived was because pretty much all of their members got put in prison. They got put in prison for armed actions. And this was very much, they still had the tradition of the Republican movement, whereby you fundraise by robbing banks. I'm quite serious. I mean, and two of their members, Noel and Mary Murray, were actually imprisoned and sentenced to death in Ireland for the murder of a off-duty policeman during a botched bank raid. And they were later released after an international protest campaign. But basically, these groups, they did nothing in Ireland apart from re-establish the fact that anarchism equals terrorism. So they really didn't have much of a positive impact. However, in the next few years after this, some of the anarchists who had been involved, they started to get into discussions and form small collectives. There was collectives in Dublin, there was collectives in Ballymena, there was a bookshop in Belfast. And basically, these groups, they attracted people who called themselves anarchists. But they had very little in common other than that. They knew what they were against, but they didn't really know what they stood for. And so they were pretty much totally incapable of achieving any type of unified action or even sort of common discussion. But I mean, this was the first start of anarchism in Ireland. As the 1980s started, some of the anarchists who had been involved in these groups became a little bit frustrated and disillusioned with these short-lived and sort of very loose coalitions or collectives. And they started discussing about the formation of a more politically unified and class-based anarchist organisation. And in 1984, this culminated in the foundation of the Workers' Solidarity Movement, of which I represent. And we have existed since 1984, and we have branches in Dublin and Cork, which are the two biggest cities in the south. Okay. Now, the WSM is based around the document known as the Platform, the Organisational Platform of Anarchist Communists, or Libertarian Communists, rather. And I'm not going to go into this in any great depth, but I'll just describe the major points that we take out of the platform. It's only a very small pamphlet, and it doesn't really say all that much, but the four major points that we take out of it are the need for an organisation to have theoretical unity. And by theoretical unity, we mean that we all agree where we want to get to. We all basically decide among ourselves what we mean by anarchism and what are the grand steps necessary to get there. And okay, the second point is tactical unity. And this means that it means concrete things, like that we all decide on what our strategy is. For example, it means that if people think that the best way to get to anarchism is through armed struggle, or through support for the IRA campaign, for example, or the real IRA campaign at the moment. I mean, it just means that we don't want them within the WSM. We have to be working together. And without something like tactical unity, an organisation never really becomes more than the sum of its parts. It's just a collection of people coming together to discuss the contradictory, sometimes contradictory things that they're doing. So we've decided that as anarchists, we want to act as one. We want to discuss among ourselves what is the best way to get to where we want to go, and then we'll all carry it out, even though some of us may not always agree with every single decision. Okay. The third point is collective responsibility. And collective responsibility, to me, it just means that every member is responsible to the collective for their activity. So, for example, the WSM was invited to send a speaker by NEFAC. Now, I'm delegated by the WSM to come and represent our position. I could, if I so chose, I could talk about my pet theories about soccer, for example, to you people here. But that would be that would not be fulfilling my responsibility to the collective. Basically, I've been delegated and I'm representing my organisation, so I have to basically do my best to fulfil that. And that's, to me, what collective responsibility means. I'm responsible to the collective. I'm not acting on my own behalf. I'm acting for the collective. The fourth point is federalism. And federalism means that basically the power and the decision-making power within the organisation should reside within the branches. And it should not be centralised. And basically the members of the organisation come together in a free spirit of collective debate to give added effect to our activity. Okay. Now those four points to me, they don't really say very much. They are just basically the four necessary points for an organisation to be more than the sum of its members, to be able to work as an organisation, to be able to take common decisions and then carry them out. Okay. So basically, as I say, the platform is a very, very small document. It's only about 30 pages long, and it's not a Bible to anyone. We just take these points out of it that we need to operate as an organisation rather than as a collection of sort of individuals coming together to occasionally collaborate. Now, this to us is one of the areas where anarchists have historically really, they haven't lived up to their goals, because anarchists in every type of field advocate organisation. But anarchists have, over the years, have often completely failed to form organisations among themselves that have actually been effective. So, beyond the platform, we think it's necessary for any anarchist organisation to really flesh it out. I mean, there's lots and lots of things even within the structure of the organisation that the platform does not address. For example, minority rights. The platform says pretty much nothing about this, and we think that's very important for an anarchist organisation to have. Basically the right for people to have a minority opinion within it and have that respected. And so, for example, what we do in the workers' solidarity movement is the organisation does not dominate members' political activity. Like, members are free to join any other political organisation or any other political activity as long as it does not fundamentally contradict the positions of the WSM. Also, members if they are speaking in a public meeting, for example, they can represent their own opinions, even if they're contradictory to the organisation's opinions, as long as they make it clear that they are their own opinions. Okay. That's as to the structure and the sort of theoretical underpinnings, as we see it, of an anarchist organisation. Now, beyond that, an important thing is to look at what is the role of the anarchist organisation. Why have an anarchist organisation at all? And we think that the basic role of the anarchist organisation is to fight the battle of ideas within our society. We have to convince people, and a lot of people. I mean, to achieve anarchism, we need to convince an awful lot of people that anarchism is not only possible, but it's also desirable. That's where we want to get to. And to this end, we think that the dissemination of information and arguments is of crucial importance to anarchists. We really have to persuade people. We have to give them a convincing explanation why our fundamental problems are caused by capitalism, and why anarchism is an answer, and not only an answer, but the only possible answer. Very few people are convinced by abstract intellectual arguments. To convince people are you have to show that these ideas are useful tools in struggle, that they actually work in practice. We need to work within mass movements, basically. We need to work not as leaders within these movements, but as ordinary members who have a particular set of ideas and who always argue these ideas and try to persuade people that these are the best ways of us achieving our goals. We do fundamentally think that our ideas are the best. Like, anarchism is a very, very powerful idea. But we do need to show people all the time that they can work in practice and that they are the most useful way to get what we want. So that's basically the idea of our organisation. Now, I'll go on to describe some of the things that we actually do. And first, I'll talk about our propaganda, because we think that is a very, very important aspect of the anarchist organisation. Our major work that we put probably most of our work into is the production of a newspaper. We produce Workers' Solidarity, which is, you can see over there on the table. And it has just reached issue number 70, which makes it very, very old in terms of most anarchist publications. It's lasted for 18 years and 70 issues. In the early years, we never really managed to distribute more than a few hundred copies of each issue. But in the last 2 years, we have changed to a new format, and we produce 6,000 every 2 months, and we distribute all of those pretty much within Ireland. So that is a great improvement. we basically give them away. Our major problem used to be with distribution. Nobody would distribute them to shops or anything like that, and there's no network of alternative bookshops or anything like that within Ireland. So we decided to go to a free version and basically give it out in our neighbourhoods, door to door in our neighbourhoods and at demonstrations, at meetings and stuff like that. And this has proved to be very, very successful. We're getting a huge amount of feedback from people, and we have a much, much higher presence now. As well as the paper, we also produce a theoretical journal, which is Red and Black Revolution over there. And this takes a much more in-depth look at the issues that we think are important. And we also try and concentrate on the issues that are important within the global anarchist movement. Things like, for example, at the moment we've got an article on the Black Bloc and the anti-capitalist movement, things like this, whatever is the most topical. We try and take a very in-depth anarchist look at that and to offer some much deeper level of analysis. Because as well as those two regular publications, we also, from time to time, we make pamphlets, a lot of which you can see over there, and they take an even deeper look at a particular issue. We also produce leaflets, and we have an irregular newsletter which we distribute at demonstrations as well, and they will all be very topical and address a particular issue. Like, for example, at the demonstration on Palestine recently, we distributed leaflets about that, and we think that's very, very important for anarchists to do. Like, Trotskyists and various Leninists have always done that, and as a result, many anarchists have shied away from giving out leaflets, you know, seeing it as something that you know, Marxists do. But we think that, you know, that is, we need to get our message out there. That's what we're there for, so we think that's very important. We also hold regular public meetings, very much like tonight's meeting, where we'll advertise around the cities and again, we'll try and hold it on a topical issue or something. Like, if we've got a foreign speaker, we'll advertise it on that. And we think these are very important ways for us to engage our members and our sympathisers and contacts in debate and discussion about our ideas, and also to get a more fundamental thrashing out of our ideas, to get a chance to really put our ideas to the test. Because, you know, in these type of meetings, if you bring up something that somebody disagrees with, it's very likely to get contradicted, and you're going to get into debate. And we think that's very important for the anarchist organisation. Okay, and over the last few years, the internet has also become a very important way for us to get our ideas across. Our website is called struggle.ws, and we have got probably something over 1,200 documents on that site now. It's a very large site, and we basically try and make that a knowledge repository for anarchist documents and for documents about struggles in Ireland and anarchism in Ireland and anarchism all over the world. Struggle.ws, struggle.ws. Okay, and our members are also involved in helping to run dozens of email lists on the internet, ranging from the Anarchy Africa list to the Irish Anarchism list to the Irish Anti-Racism list to the Irish Pro-Choice in Abortion list. And our members put an awful lot of work into providing the infrastructure for discussion and debate within a lot of these movements, both in Ireland and internationally. And in the last few years, another thing that we have just started to do is all of our publications, we put them into PDF format. And PDF format allows people to download them and print them out, all laid out nicely and so forth. And this has been very successful as well, as some of our publications have, literally thousands have been printed out and distributed in different places of the world and in different places in Ireland as well. I mean, this allows us to, I mean, it really fundamentally reduces our distribution costs to zero. And so our sympathisers, for example, in several small towns in Ireland can print out our newspaper and distribute it locally without us having to, you know, send it to them and, or organise anything like that. So that's been very successful. Okay, and that's pretty much it as far as propaganda and production of information goes. But so now I'll go on to talk a little bit about our practical work and what we actually do in campaigns and so forth. In our practical work, we tend to prioritise work within mass movements, and for the simple reason that that's where we can reach the greatest number of people, and also because that's where how society will change through mass movements. Okay, and the most important mass movements for us are the trade unions, because that is where the revolution is going to happen. If there's not a revolution within the trade unions, there won't be a revolution whatsoever. Or if the trade unions aren't part of that revolution, rather. Okay, so And within these mass movements and trade unions, we, our members, concentrate on arguing for greater democracy and accountability, as well as trying to argue for direct action as a tactic. However, in Ireland, over the last 17 years, there has been a social partnership in place. Now, this has basically the leadership of the trade unions and the bosses, Confederation, IBEC, as well as the government, get together. And they come up with a deal, which is basically they impose for the next 4 or 5 years. And this basically limits strikes, and it sort of sets wage rises every year. And this has had the effect of completely eliminating any type of rank and file activity, because everything is decided in advance on the leadership level, and there's nothing really for the rank and file to do. So as a result, it's been very, very difficult for us to do much within the trade unions. I mean, that has pretty much corresponded with our period of existence. So within the trade unions, we've pretty much had to do low-level work. We've tried to establish a network of rank-and-file activists and distribute a newsletter among them. We've also, you know, agitated within our branches for various democratic reforms. We've also been involved in several strike support groups. But basically, the focus of our work within mass organisations has had to be in community campaigns. And our particular work has been done within the campaigns of resistance to service charges which have been imposed by the government for various local services. In 1994 in Dublin, the government imposed a tax of about $250 per person for the water supply, which was formerly, you know, supported by central taxation. Now, basically, we got together with a very small group of activists, starting off with about 15 or 20 people, and we organised a campaign against this. We basically called for mass non-payment, and for and this proved to be very, very successful. After 3 years of this tax, the tax was completely defeated. And the way it was defeated, firstly, was because people didn't pay. At the end, less than half of the people had paid. But the government, basically, they upped the ante as soon as people didn't pay. They sent inspectors into areas to try and cut off people's water supply. And in these areas, we organised, not us, but I mean the whole campaign organised, basically picketing of the areas to make sure that the inspectors couldn't come in and just physically stop them from cutting off the water supply. And that was very, very successful. And after that, the government tried to bring people to court to force them to pay. And we'd organised mass pickets outside these courthouses to try and make a huge amount of noise to basically render the procedure impossible. And eventually, it just worked. Like, the government was faced with less than half the people paying. And whenever they tried to actually do anything about it, they'd be faced with mass resistance. So after 3 years, they just abandoned the tax altogether. And at the moment, they're trying again. Basically, now they're trying on refuse or garbage collection. They're trying to charge every house a similar amount of money for garbage collection. And again, we're organising in a very similar way. And so far, this is going very, very well. Less than a third of all households have actually paid this tax, even though it's been in place for 1 year. And the government, they have... When the government... First of all, in Cork, they actually stopped collecting people's garbage. And basically said, if you don't pay, we won't collect it. Activists organised in their neighbourhoods to collect all that garbage and bring it to City Hall and dump it in front of the City Hall. Then the government jailed several people for doing this, at which stage there was an enormous outcry in the media, because the first woman that they jailed had a 3-week-old kid or something like that, and it was just an absolute disaster for them. So then they backed off. And they're still trying to impose this, but basically they're completely failing, and we're pretty confident that we're going to defeat them again. Okay, so as well as working within these mass campaigns, we also think it's very, very important for anarchists to oppose all different types of oppression, no matter what type of oppression, whether it be sexism or racism or religious discrimination, and not just economic exploitation. To this end, we put a lot of work into campaigns, you know, against these various types of oppression. wherever possible in these types of areas, we try to build broad coalitions with all of the forces that basically oppose these types of oppression. So, for example, in our anti-sexist work, basically, we put a lot of effort into building coalitions involving liberals, anarchists, Labour Party activists, for example, for abortion rights. Okay. Now, in our anti-racism work, in 1997, we set up an organisation called the Anti-Racism Campaign. Ireland has, until very, very recently, has no history of immigration. It's always been emigration. So there was an economic boom in Ireland for the last 6 years. It just ended about a year ago, but for about 6 years there was an economic boom. And this brought some type of immigration into Ireland for the first time, mostly from Africa and the Middle East and Eastern Europe. Now, this coincided with the construction by all the European governments, basically, of Fortress Europe, which is basically a completely anti-immigrant regime everywhere and scaremongering against immigrants and so forth. So we set up the anti-racism campaign, again, with other activists, and basically to fight against government discrimination against refugees. We do stuff like, I mean, whenever there's, on several occasions, government ministers have come out and you know, made blatantly racist statements. And whenever that happens, we'll do stuff like we'll occupy their clinics. Again, several of our members have got arrested doing that. We'll have pickets outside jailhouses whenever they jail refugees prior to deporting them. And we'll also distribute a huge amount of information. We make anti-racist leaflets, basically trying to make the point that refugees are being scapegoated. Okay.
And there are those rumours of pie throwing.
Yeah, yeah. pie throwing, I'll tell you that. That's not to do with the refugees.
Oh, no, yeah.
No, that's another one of our campaigns. Okay, another big area in Ireland for anti-oppression work is obviously sexism. Due to the long, long decades of Catholic domination, the states and the Catholic Church has very much been dominant within the state. And the state has a very, very repressive attitude to women's rights, particularly their reproductive rights. It was only in 1979 that contraception became legal in Ireland, which is an amazing thing to think now. But it was only in 1991 that people could legally buy condoms without a prescription from their doctors. And to get that prescription, you had to provide a marriage certificate in 1991. It was in 1995 that divorce was made legal in Ireland, and that was after a referendum campaign that was only passed by about 8,000 votes, and all of the Irish anarchists put a lot of work into getting the vote out for that referendum. So we put a very important contribution into that campaign. Now, even more shocking is that abortion remains completely illegal in Ireland today, even when the life of the mother is at risk. Now, there have been four referendums in the last 20 years, and each of those has been initiated by the Catholic Church, and each of those has sought to make abortion even more illegal somehow. And we have been active participants in all of these referendum campaigns. We basically concentrate on trying to get the vote out, the pro-choice vote out. And in 1992, in the early 90s, I think it was 1990, in fact, we participated in the foundation of the Dublin Abortion Rights Group. And that is still today probably the only group in Ireland that will openly call for free and completely legal abortion on demand. We organised in 1992. Ireland saw the X case. The X case was when a 13-year-old girl was raped and got pregnant. Her parents brought her to England to get an abortion. The Irish government found out about this and basically passed an order ordering her parents to bring her back, to preventing her from having an abortion. We thought, the Dublin Abortion Rights was very, very small. Perhaps 10 activists, half of them from the WSM, were involved. And we thought that this was an issue that we could fight and win on because it was an absolute disgrace. And so we organised a march, and the march brought 15,000 people onto the streets and basically has changed the entire climate for abortion rights. It put abortion reform on the agenda for the very first time ever in Ireland and has put the church onto the back foot. And the most recently, there were 2 months ago, there was the most recent abortion referendum in Ireland. And this abortion referendum was again initiated by the Catholic Church and the pro-life movement. One of the things that it sought to do was to give a 12-year prison sentence to any woman who had an abortion in Ireland. It was really draconian. So again, we campaigned very, very hard on this. We spent, I personally spent probably half of my nights walking around the working class suburbs of Dublin handing out leaflets. And since that was February, it was very, very miserable. But in the end, it was really well worth it because we won by 10,800 votes, which again is a tiny percentage, and across the whole country. And this was the first time ever in Ireland that the combined forces of the government, the Catholic Church, and the pro-life movement have ever been defeated in a referendum. So it was a real victory for us. So it was well worth it. Okay, another very obvious area of oppression in Ireland has been religious discrimination, particularly in the north. The imperialist presence of the British state continues till this day in Northern Ireland, and it has basically did construct a sectarian state in order for it to maintain power. Okay, although the scale of the shootings and the bombings has decreased since the peace process and the Good Friday Agreement, on the grounds the communities remain probably more divided than they ever have been in the past. Unfortunately, we've never had any members in the north, and community activism and sort of political campaigns in the north are very much controlled by one side or the other, and it's very difficult for any independent voice to get in there. So the stuff that we've been able to do has been quite limited. What we have done, though, is whenever there's a large demonstration, or for example, the Orange Order marches, when there's been demonstrations to oppose them, and any type of whenever there's large demonstrations to oppose any type of aspect of the British imperialist state or the local henchmen of the Orange Order, we'll try and be present. You know, for two reasons: for a start, to show solidarity with the oppressed people, and secondly, to try and spread our propaganda. And in our newspaper, we always have at least one article about Northern Ireland. And in those articles, we do two things. First of all, we always oppose imperialism and the artificial border on the island. But secondly, we always argue against the logic of nationalism and against sectarianism. And the logic of nationalism in the north is basically that all the oppressed people, all the Catholics, should combine and fight against the Protestants. Whereas we would see the real route for freedom is to try and persuade the Protestant working class that their interests lie much better in combining with the Catholic working class and throwing off the whole, the whole nationalisms whatsoever, altogether. Okay. Another area of our work in recent years has been within the global anti-capitalist movement. In Ireland, in the last 3 or 4 years, there has been something of a flowering of libertarian and anarchist ideas within this movement. In the last 2 years, two new anarchist organisations have emerged: the Anarcho-Syndicalist Federation and the Anarchist Federation. Both of these are mainly based in the north. Although we do, our primary focus is to try and build a very coherent and disciplined anarchist organisation. We do also think that it's very, very important for us to build alliances with all of the sympathetic forces wherever possible. Although we might disagree with these organisations on particular points, we think that wherever we do agree with them, we should work together. Therefore, we have put a tremendous amount of work into building links with other anarchists and libertarians within the political movements and within the environmental movements and within the globalisation movements. We've established a network of sympathisers throughout the country, and these sympathisers distribute our newspapers and distribute our propaganda. And we have also set up a... We've also cooperated with these sympathisers and individual anarchists to set up an Irish Reclaim the Streets organisation, which just had its very biggest manifestation ever 2 days ago when 1,000 people took to the streets of Dublin. We've also helped people set up a critical mass organisation. Now, these wouldn't be our primary focus, but we think it's very important for us to cooperate with people who are doing these type of work, because it's stuff we agree with, but it wouldn't be where we'd be focused. But we still think it's very important to build links with all these movements. Within particular campaigns, for example, political campaigns about the war in Afghanistan or the Israeli invasion of Palestine at the moment, we try wherever possible to set up alliances of all the anarchists involved. So, for example, during the Afghanistan war, we created an umbrella organisation. We didn't create it, but we did the groundwork to create it, called Anarchists Against the War, which brought together all the anarchist organizations and a lot of anarchist individuals as well. The Anarchists Against the War campaign organized a direct action protest at Shannon Airport. Shannon Airport is an airport in the west of Ireland, which was being used to illegally refuel American warplanes. We basically attempted an occupation of it. It wasn't very successful, the occupation that is, but it got a huge amount of media coverage. You know, it wasn't very successful because the airport was full of American GIs at the time, so there was a huge amount of, and there was maybe about 100 of us, and there were several thousand of them, so it was probably lucky that we didn't get in. Okay, and our most ambitious attempt to date at forming an alliance of anarchists within Ireland has been the setting up of Grassroots Gathering. And this is an umbrella organisation to basically bring together all of the anti-authoritarians within the country. We have had two national meetings to date. Both of them have brought about 80 people together. And basically most people come from the anarchist political campaigns or particular issue-focused campaigns such as Third World Solidarity campaigns or the environmentalist movements. And these are very useful in building links between the movement and overcoming any types of suspicion and sectarianism that often seem to grow within anarchist milieus. And to date, we think this has been a very, very successful use of our resources, because the Irish anarchist movement to date remains almost entirely free of the sectarianism that often dogs the movements in a lot of countries. Although, I mean, I wouldn't say it's entirely free, but we do work together very well. As an example of the work of coordinating between anarchists, on the day before I left Dublin, which was 8 days ago now, there was a mobilisation against the war in Palestine, and this saw all the three anarchist organisations plus a lot of anarchist individuals combining to form a bloc on this march. And this bloc was the biggest single mobilisation of anarchists that Ireland has ever seen. So we think that the movement is in a very healthy state. And after the march, we all met up in a bar together to discuss and, you know, debate our differences and have a few drinks. And okay, finally, another area. We had to. Another international work is another area that we consider to be very important. Capitalism is a global system, and we need to organise globally to defeat it. Our international work can be divided into two areas. Firstly, there is showing practical solidarity with the movement in the Third World. We think it's very important for anarchists to do what they can to overcome the economic inequalities between within the global anarchist movement. Therefore, to this end, we have a solidarity fund which we donate 5% of our membership dues and 25% of our any profits from our publications. And we use this basically to fund anarchist projects in the Third World. In the last few years, for example, we've given money to a radio project in Nigeria, and we have paid money to publish some pamphlets within the Czech Republic, and various things like that. We also try to share whatever skills we have with Third World movements. For example, we'll host the websites of a lot of African anarchist organizations and the Chilean Quack and a couple of other South American ones as well. So that's a practical example of how we can show solidarity with movements in the Third World. Let's see. We also think it's very important for anarchists to engage in debate within the global anarchist movements, to exchange ideas and to basically thrash out our ideas among globally, because we really do need to build a global movement. To this end, we concentrate on distributing our theoretical journal to anarchist libraries and bookshops all over the world. We also put a high priority on engaging in discussion with other anarchist movements in other parts of the world and building links between them. And on several occasions we have brought international anarchists to Ireland for speaking tours. Most recently we brought a Czech anarchist to Ireland after the World Bank meeting in Prague in 2000. Okay, our members also donate a lot of practical work to a lot of the infrastructure on the internet that holds the international anarchist movement together. For example, it's been WSM members that have set up a lot of the most important international anarchist mailing lists, such as the organized list and the anarchist platform list. We've also, over the years, put a lot of work into the A-Infos project, which is an international anarchist news service. Most recently we have engaged in more ambitious projects such as the Against War and Terrorism pamphlets, which Wayne has contributed to, in fact. And these have been, a couple of WSM members have contributed to this, and basically this has been an attempt to produce pamphlets or magazines addressing topical issues like such as the wars at the moment, and to try and pool some of the global knowledge of the anarchist movement. So that's basically about it for our work. But when I describe the various work that we have done over the years, you know, it could seem like we're a really big organisation with lots and lots of members, but the truth is that we remain a tiny organisation altogether. We were set up by 5 people in 1984, and today we have just 13 members. Although our small size could be seen as a failure, the difficulty of the task that faced us should be borne in mind. We were set up in 1984 in a country that had absolutely no history of anarchism, where there's no famous anarchists, and there's no history of anarchist organisation. There's not even a history of any type of sort of grassroots mass organisation or mass militant organisation within the trade union since about the 1910s. So it was really a very difficult task that faced us. It's a country where the right-wing parties normally grab about 75% of the vote, where the Labour Party, which has only been ever very, very lukewarmly socially democratic, has never really got more than 15% of the vote. And today, after 2 decades of our existence, anarchism is much, much more widely known within Ireland than it has ever been before. And the anarchist movement in Ireland is much, much larger than it has ever been before. The WSM, we've established ourselves as a serious organisation on the left, and we have built a contact with a lot of activists, and very importantly we've done practical things like we have built the skills to be able to organise campaigns and protests, which is often things that are very much overlooked within anarchist organisations, and it's interesting to know. I mean, these things are actually quite difficult to organise, even to organise a speaking meeting or something like that. It does take quite a lot of practical skills, and that's one of the things that we think is very important for the anarchist organisation as well, to develop the skills of its members and to develop the education of its members. Okay. So rather than seeing our small size as a sign of weakness, I see it as a demonstration of the immense work that can be done by a small number of committed anarchists working together in coherent organisations, even in very difficult circumstances. So that's basically it. And any questions or comments anyone might have? Very welcome.
Well, one thing that I wonder, you say 13 members, but you talk about federation.
Yeah.
Do you have subgroups of the 13, and how is that divided? And a little bit about the meetings that you would have during the week, the month, the year? How do you get together and make decisions and do that sort of thing?
Okay, firstly, on the federation point, we've got 2 branches, one in Dublin and one in Cork. So basically the national organisation operates as a federation of the two. Obviously we'd like to have much more branches, and then we could really start to experiment with, you know, it would become more difficult. You know, obviously it's easier to remain coherent and stuff because we're small and because it's a small country. However, I mean, we do think it's possible. You know, we have had a situation of 2 branches in different cities that don't have day-to-day contacts, you know, for 18 years, and we have held it together, which is in itself an achievement. In terms of like what meetings and stuff we have, that depends. I mean, we actually experiment and change a lot, you know. We try different formats and different things and see what works. The moment what we do is each branch has a bi-weekly meeting, so we meet every 2 weeks. Then we'll have working group meetings, basically, that are delegated out of that. So at the moment, for example, there's depending on what we're working on most at the time. So we had during the abortion referendum, we had an abortion rights subgroup, and they did a lot of the practical organisation of our work within that. So the branch meetings every 2 weeks, they will discuss the nuts and bolts of, you know, what we're going to be doing over the next couple of weeks and so on. And then every 6 months we will have a national meeting, in which and the national meetings we can change our policies, or we can elect people to officers, you know, we can, our national secretary or international secretary, stuff like that. We also have, once a month, we have a public meeting, which is something like this, where we'll have a big discussion and stuff like that. So that's basically it.
And decision making?
decision making comes that, I mean, it depends. Decisions for the local branch, it goes at once every 2 week meeting.
And is it by voting or is it by community?
Oh, it's by voting, yeah. If there's, I mean,
if you've got five against four, five wins.
And we always try and reach consensus, but it, I mean, if it's obvious that there's a person who's not going to agree with somebody else, we'll go to a vote, basically.
And Frank had a question.
13. We've got about 100 people who distribute our paper, and they would be sympathisers and contacts. We've got also, within all of our work, we basically work with other people. For example, I'll give you during the abortion referendum, we were part of the Alliance for a No Vote, and that included the Labour Party, the Trotskyist groups, feminist groups. I mean, that was a really broad coalition. It ended up that the anarchists did most of the work in France, but there was a lot of other people in it. We did a lot of the work anyway.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, if people want to be ruled by authorities, you know, it's up to them. You know, I don't think that it would ever be sustainable if you have a choice between freedom and oppression. You know, freedom's going to win out in the end if you've got a choice. But I mean, personally, I think anarchism is the answer. I don't think there's any other way that we can achieve the type of world I want to live in, which is a world free of domination, where each person is an equal to everyone else. And I think that. I mean, I think that almost all the revolutionary strands say that, you know, that's what they want to reach. But I think that there are logical flaws in most of them, you know. I don't think you can, I mean, I think the end shapes the means. So I don't think you can get to a free society through authoritarian means. I think you've got to have an anarchist practice and try and build the anarchist society within this one, you know. Basically, you've got to build up the capacity to organise the new society as you're defeating this one, you know. And I mean, that's why I say anarchism is the answer to me.
One of the criticisms that I think we hear a lot, and as evidenced by the small number of people in the room, especially of younger people, is that there's something wrong with an anarchist organisation. And I think a lot of the folks that we deal with and you know, work with politically as anarchists are suspicious of organized groups of anarchists. There's something suspect, something authoritarian about that. What do you say to them?
Well, I'd say, funnily enough, I'd say there's something suspicious about an anarchist who won't work with other people in an organization. I mean, anarchism is a profoundly collective ethos. I mean, capitalism fosters a very aggressive individualistic ethos. Mm-hmm. And I think the big thing about anarchists is we want to form a society where everybody has power, but that implies the fact that you're going to sometimes have to basically submit to the collective will. And I think that's where that comes from, a fear of submitting yourself to a collective will. And I mean, I think that's necessary. If we want to build a society that is collectively managed and collectively run, we have to engage in these type of organizations where they're not just individualistic and, you know, selfish. So I think, I mean, that's what I think anyway. And I also think, it just in terms of an individual anarchist, like for me personally, to get involved in the organization, basically I always have been I was an anarchist for years before I joined the WSM. Mm-hmm. And what made me join it was I just saw that that's where I could do work. This is where people were doing work, and the amount of work you put in, you could see that you got something out of it, you know. Rather than a lot of the loose milieus I saw before, lots of work was put in, but it was squandered, and it was very difficult to say, okay, I want to work on this project, you know, let's do it, you know. And I mean, to me, I mean, the organization just works much better. Like, I think it'd be difficult to find 13 anarchists in the world who have produced so much literature and so much argument over the years than the WSM. And I think that comes down to us being organized.
Right. And what about organized labor? Think about working with organized labor?
I mean, as I was saying, trade unions, like, that's our primary focus. I mean, we do whatever we can,
yeah.
And that is our number one priority. Unfortunately, as I say, it's been very difficult for us in the last few years, but, I mean, we're always in there, and we have, like, several of our members have been elected to the Council of Trade Unions, which is a delegated position. And they've also been shop stewards in their workplaces and stuff like that. And so several of our members are actually quite well-known trade unionists in Ireland. So, I mean, that is definitely a primary focus of our work.
Right.
Right.
I'm wondering if you've made any effort to speak to Irish
people. Well, certainly...
I don't think they embrace you, but
yeah. Well, certainly, like, on this tour, I've been doing a speaking tour. And some of the meetings have been advertised within Irish communities in Boston and in Montreal, and some of them have come along and asked me various questions and stuff like that. But basically, there's very few Irish American groups or Irish immigrant groups that would be too close to where we are, you know. They tend to be quite nationalistic. And we do have certain links with individual Irish immigrants within, for example, there's some people within the IWW in Australia, and there is certain Connolly associations of sort of Irish socialist immigrants that we have links with, informal ones. But basically the overwhelming strand of Irish immigrant politics would be towards the nationalist movement and quite hostile to socialism, I think. So that limits what we can practically do. Yeah.
And that's why also I'm not religious, and that's also another problem.
Yeah.
And but you know, I think it's important that we try to bring our voices to, I mean, painful sometimes. But also important is to have this meeting. So I only heard about it from my son, you know? And you know, like in the Irish newspapers, I know you would get people, because I know there are other people, not many, but like me, who think like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You're really Zoki's mother.
Yeah.
That's beautiful. That's good.
And I think by talking about the campaigns against water rates now,
yeah.
that was the Irish echo, the Irish voice. I think that makes sense.
Yeah.
That appeals to the Irish mentality.
Yeah, I mean I do agree with you, but I mean, again, I'd say we're a very small group, and even within Ireland, you know, it's very hard to make our voices heard, you know. Hopefully as we grow over the next few years, you know, we will start to, not only in Ireland will be more visible, but also overseas, you know. I mean, obviously our primary focus at the moment is trying to get ourselves more known within Ireland and, you know, our arguments more out there. So, I mean, hopefully in a few years you'll see us popping up in the papers over here.
Yeah, James.
I was wondering, do you find it hard to find people who are interested, who are representative of the population, seeing that Ireland is strong in patriarchy and racial?
Well, I mean, to some extent, like, we'd be very similar to most anarchist groups or most political groups, in that there'd be more men than women involved. However, we probably have 30, well, out of the 13, there's four who are women, so whatever percentage that is, somewhere about a third. So, I mean, we don't think that's necessarily, there's much we can do about that. It's just, we live in a society where white men generally are conditioned and sort of trained to engage in public life, and other people aren't. So that's something that the anarchist movement itself can't completely overcome. You know, that's a big problem for society, and we can't overcome it ourselves. So, I mean, we do what we can, and we think it's very important, like, in those ways, rather than internalizing it altogether and saying, okay, the problem is with us, you know, we try to do external work, like our work on the abortion referendum and racism work, you know, and we think that's to us that's very, very important, you know. Not just to say the problem is within ourselves and we have to get racism and sexism out of ourselves, but we have to try and do that out of society as well, you know. So. Well, I mean, that's a difficult question, and it's one that we've been debating a lot recently. I mean, the thing about it is that within the Protestant working class, there is actually a lot of... There's not that much support, okay, for the loyalist paramilitaries and stuff like that. I mean, there is to a certain extent, but there's also a lot of fear, you know. There is quite a lot of opposition, but it's almost impossible to voice it, because... Basically, the Protestant paramilitaries, the people that they kill the most are bad prods, what they call bad prods, people who are disloyal to, you know, loyalism or the Crown or whatever. So, I mean, what we really need, we think, is we need to try and find a space where Protestant workers can protest or make a public show of opposition to the Orange Order or the British Army or to loyalism in general without them getting killed, you know, which is difficult to find, you know. But, I mean, that's our thinking at the moment. And, I mean, because within the Northern Anarchist movement, and even within the Southern one, there is Protestants or people who come from a Protestant background. I mean, they're all atheists, pretty much. Every single anarchist in Ireland would be an atheist. But, you know, in Ireland it makes sense to say Catholic atheist or Protestant atheist, you know. So in fact, I know a Muslim kid who went to school in Belfast, and all the time kids were coming up to him and saying, are you a Protestant or a Catholic Muslim? So even that. So I mean the answer is, it's very difficult, but I mean that's what we think is probably going to be the solution in the long term.
Three points. Number one, do you come out of the anarchist movement, is that mostly out of the Catholic rather than the Protestant side? Number two, did you say you had a relationship with the Real IRA? And if so, isn't the Real IRA more into a nationalist perspective than most of the other communities? And number three, have you had any problems with the regular Gerry Adams kind of side?
Mm-hmm. No, okay. So what was the first question again? Well, actually, in terms of political heritage, probably about half of the Irish anarchists at the moment are ex-Republicans. Okay, they basically split with Republicanism at some stage. Like, some of them came out of the official IRA, some of them came out of Sinn Féin. But in the north, the anarchists in Ireland are probably 50-50, coming from Protestant and Catholic backgrounds. So... And even in the south, there's some people from Protestant backgrounds, so it's probably, overall, it's quite representative. Now, in terms of the Real IRA, yeah, we don't have any links with them, and we see that they are being very regressive. I mean, they have got a more nationalistic outlook than almost anybody else, and they're continuing a war that is pretty much unwinnable, and they don't really seem to have any strategy there, apart from that they don't want to give up the guns and they don't want to stop the war, so... I mean, we'd have big problems with them. And with Sinn Féin itself, like, Sinn Féin, we wouldn't really have too many problems with them in that we don't really step in their toes. We don't have much presence in areas where they control. We do, in the south, we occasionally find ourselves working side by side with them in stuff like anti-racism stuff or anti-heroin stuff. But... and lots of our activists, or some of our activists, would have very sort of close personal ties with a lot of people within Republicanism, so it would be sort of, we'd get along okay, you know, there wouldn't be really tension between us, I'd say. People know each other personally. A lot of the Sinn Féin activists are actually very good and genuine people on the ground, you know. I think the leadership is just like any old political party at this stage, you know. They're trying to get power and they don't care about anything else, but a lot of their activists are actually doing a lot of good work on the ground, so we'd have okay relations with them, I'd say. Okay. The the pamphlet is $2 and the magazine or the paper is 25 cents. So but the Utopian
magazine is $5.
Well, actually, I mean, there is a big difference, a qualitative difference between the two sides, you know. For example, if you go to Derry, you can find a lot of Protestants, dissident Protestants living in nationalist areas without any problem, you know. Whereas you won't find the other way around. Like, I mean, the UDA and the UVF, the main Protestant paramilitaries, they kill people for having Catholic girlfriends, and they kill Catholic girlfriends. I mean, that's been their... They basically aim to keep people, you know, as separated as possible. The Republican movement has at least got a rhetorical commitment to, you know, equality and to non-sectarianism. And, it doesn't live up to it by any means. Like, I mean, you will find in Derry, like, anti-English stuff and, you know, and a lot of sort of prejudice against outsiders. But it's not to the same extent at all. They couldn't get away with going around just killing people just for being Protestant, for example. You know, because they have this rhetoric and they have to at least pretend to live up to it. I mean, there's a group called the Republican Writers Group that set up about a year ago, and they were dissident Republicans, basically opposed to the strategy of the leadership of Sinn Féin, and one of their members was attacked and hospitalised by IRA activists. Just about 2 weeks ago, there was a shooting of a Catholic taxi driver in County Tyrone, and he was shot dead by the IRA for having beaten up the local IRA commander in a pub brawl. You know, so they're very much, they operate as a, you know, a local police force. They're basically, under the terms of the agreement, they're allowed to police their own side, you know, to keep everybody in line. Like, yeah, and I mean, they do stuff like, as well, they blow the kneecaps off little kids who steal cars and stuff like that, and steal drugs, and pretty brutal. In terms of crowd violence, in Ireland, there's not really. I mean, soccer is not a huge spectator sport. Only the international game. So it's Gaelic games are the big spectator sport. And they're like, there's no violence there. I mean, everybody's drunk and sort of falling around, and it's pretty, it's pretty barbaric. But I mean, there's no violence. The only violent time ever there was a soccer match in Ireland was when Britain or England played Ireland about 6 years ago, and a fascist group of Combat 18 supporters from England basically started a riot in the stadium.
One of the problems you have is that Ireland also is a very feudal country as opposed to a working class country, so they lack the sort of the union consciousness to a great degree. But what the Mitchell process has done, I'm sure, is to bring a lot of people from the countryside into industry in the towns, and that's going to last for a certain number of years, which you said is probably coming to an end just now, which is going to leave a lot of displaced people from the countryside in the towns, where they had a good job, relatively, for a certain number of years, and then going to be landed in unemployment. Do you have any particular ideas towards that, to go where industry will go after it leaves Ireland, or what's going to happen, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I do have my own ideas about this. Again, this is very much speculation because it's very hard to predict exactly what's going to happen with any economy. But I'd say, yeah, we're in for quite a long and deep slump in Ireland. And I think we're going to see a... one of the things that's kept social peace for the last 10 years is, as you say, the economy has been growing at about 6 or 7% a year. And this is I mean, as an activist, it's very hard to operate in that environment because people just think, okay, it's getting steadily better, it's getting steadily better. I mean, this is a more realistic way to improve my life than, you know, a revolution, which seems so impossible. But, I mean, when that starts to turn around, and it's turning around now, you start to get people saying, oh, God, you know, I've been working all these years and really haven't got much, and it's now getting worse. So, I mean, even now we've seen a upsurge in trade union activity in Ireland. Like, there's been the teachers' strike, and there's been a big strike with nurses, and there's several other sort of major industrial disputes brewing. So, I mean, I do think we're going to see, we will see a long slump, and we will see a rise in militancy within the working class in the next few years. That's pretty much ended now. Yeah, the last structural funds, I think, run out in 2003 or something like that. Yeah, and Ireland is going to have to pay to the EU after, from now on, rather than receiving money, yeah.
Bob? I remember 3, 4, 5 years ago, there was a huge growth in computer-related things in Ireland. Of course, now computer-related things seem to be going down. But what I was wondering was, in this country, I think there's not much connection between unions and the whole computer. Is that also the case in Ireland, or might there be more active unions within the computer?
Well, that is also the case in Ireland, actually. There's very little unions within any of the computer companies in Ireland. Now, the computer companies that opened in Ireland, they were mainly the low-skilled, sort of low-skill, low-wage end of things, you know, and they were subsidiaries mainly of American multinationals, and they set up in Ireland because Ireland is the lowest tax within the EU for corporations, and also because, you know, because it's within the EU, you don't have to pay any tariffs, and there's been a huge turnaround in that industry. It's basically, I live in a house with 3 unemployed computer workers, including myself, so, and none of us can find jobs, so I mean, that says a lot.
to wrap this up a little and to bring it back to platformism, why don't we take a few words from Wayne to talk about NEFAC and the intersection of WFM and NEFAC?
Yes, let me first tell you the lady over there that I would agree with you about the lack of time and the organization. Really would have been better if they got in. Next time, check on
that.
Okay, let me say that, first let me say, platformism, we talk about what we have in common with WSM, which is essentially something created by Nestor Makhno and some other fellows after the Russian Revolution, when they got together in Paris and they said, why did the Bolsheviks beat all the anarchists when we had such good politics? Makhno himself had led a large-scale guerrilla warfare in Ukraine. It was still beaten by the Bolsheviks eventually. And they felt, well, the reason was we were out-organized by the Marxists. And that thing the anarchists need to do is they need to build a democratic, decentralized, federated organization. That's essentially what it is. I mean, there's a whole document and certainly, they build an idea of what an organization should be like, but nobody's committed ourselves to building an organization now on the basis of a platform that was written in, you know, 70 years ago. The idea is this concept of what I would call pro-organizational anarchism, the need for anarchists to organize in order to make our ideas more coherent, in order to make an impact on society, and to do it from a pro-working class, pro-oppressed point of view. I just loved hearing from Chekhov the work that the WSM has been doing. The non-sectarian aspect, the willingness to work with anybody on almost every area, which doesn't contradict feeling that we're right. We say, we think we're right, we think we have the best point of view, but we're still willing to work with everybody else. And it still means you're able to openly and honestly say, and here's what we think, and have our open, honest, you know, debates. I have been very impressed over the last 2 years since I started reading documents and so on from the WSM on the international lists. Time after time saying, well, I agree with this, and I agree with that, and I agree with the other thing. And they're always right. Well, not always right, but mostly right. That is in my opinion, of course. And our organization, the NEFAC, is trying to do something like that in the United States, or at least in the northeastern corridor of the United States and Canada. They're trying to build a regional organization. And trying to do it essentially along these lines. Now, we just started, so we have nowhere near the experience, the tradition that this group has, and we're also a lot more spread out. Even the Northeast Corridor, the U.S. and Canada, is very two countries and two languages, and we know this is a very big, very sloppy country in many ways. And we know, unlike Ireland, we're facing the most powerful centralized government on the face of the earth. So it's a very tough row to hoe. We're trying to apply these approaches. But we'd like people to look at some of the literature that Chekhov has brought. I have a magazine that some of us in New York have put out. And we have your mail. We have everybody's name on the mailing list. And we'll let you know about other events. And we hope people, be happy to talk with people and contact us, especially if you disagree with the things we're talking about. So thank you all for coming.